The young men better put on their seatbelts for about the next 15 minutes. Hear, O sons, the instruction of a father, and give attention that you may gain understanding. The scriptures instruct the young men to be willing to listen to the older men. Tonight,
how's that? Just before I got up here, I made sure that was the thing was turned on. I flipped it the other way. I'm going to start again because I'm sort of enjoying this. Hear, O sons, the instruction of a father, and give attention that you may gain understanding. I say it again, the scriptures instruct the young men to pay attention to the older men. And for a little while tonight, that's what I'm going to ask of the young men, that they pay attention to what I have to say, because tonight I am taking pity on the young men. I'm showing mercy to the young men. I open up my eyes and I see you young men struggling with your love life. It's as if you are excavating in the mine of romance, and the mine is deep, and you are digging with a spoon. And you're challenged, looking for clues on how to proceed. And in you, the saying is fulfilled, you don't know what you don't know. But I will take pity on you and instruct you in some things about women that you need to know. Now, Scott, what makes you think you know anything about women? Haven't we heard you say publicly that I don't know anything about women? Yes, and I was telling the truth. But the fact that I've learned that means I'm way ahead of the younger guys. Besides that, I've had a private tutor for 40 years. And I do know what the book says. And besides that, I have a really deep-seated romantic nature. Now, it's really deep-seated, but it is there. So I am in excellent shape to take pity on the young men and tell them some things that they need to know about girls. Now, number one, girls are neat. Turn to Song of Solomon, chapter 4. May as well just admit that, guys. Girls are pretty neat. In Song of Solomon, chapter 4 and verse 7, "You are altogether beautiful, my darling, and there is no blemish in you. Come with me from Lebanon, my bride. May you come with me from Lebanon. Journey down from the summit of Amana, from the summit of Senir and Hermon, from the dens of lions, from the mountains of leopards. You've made my heart beat faster, my sister, my bride. You have made my heart beat faster with a single glance of your eyes, with a single strand of your necklace. How beautiful is your love, my sister, my bride. How much better is your love than wine and the fragrance of your oils, than all kinds of spices. Your lips, my bride, drip honey. Honey and milk are under your tongue, and the fragrance of your garments is like the fragrance of Lebanon." To those who have been there, this is self-explanatory. This is the picture of a young man who is just all messed up in love. And it's a great thing. But there's another side to it. Flip over to chapter 8. A lot of this will depend on how you see the Song of Solomon as a whole. The Song of Solomon, chapter 8 and verse 11. Solomon had a vineyard at Baal-Hamon. He entrusted the vineyard to caretakers. Each one was to bring 1,000 shekels of silver for its fruit. My very own vineyard is at my disposal. The 1,000 shekels are for you, Solomon, and 200 are for those who take care of its fruit. Now, when I look at the Song of Solomon, I view this as the place where the young lady tells Solomon to take a hike. She tells him to get lost. You take the shekels, I'm in control of myself, bye. He's gone. She dumps him. Now sometimes, when you're in love with a young lady, she just plain old loses interest in you and you don't know why. And it's awful. I mean, it's a terrible thing when you're suddenly hit with something like that. And the really awful part about it for guys is sometimes they just don't see it coming. They don't have a clue that it's coming. Well, guys, I'm going to do a favor. I'm going to tell you how to know it's coming. How to tell if she is losing interest in you. And by she, I mean your girlfriend, this one that has taken your attention. Now, number one, you know that she's losing interest in you if suddenly she's habitually late for everything. Now you say, wait a minute, she was always late. No, she wasn't. There was a time when she just couldn't wait for you to get there. And if she was late, it was by design, just to keep you a little bit off balance. Well, that was then, but this is now. You set a time and you say, honey, the movie will be ready at 7:30. The movie starts at 7:30. I'll pick you up at 7. And she doesn't care enough to be ready on time. She can be on time to anything she wants to be on time for. But you, well, moments with you just aren't that precious. So she doesn't really care enough to be ready because you're not that big a deal. And sometimes she just cancels. You're supposed to go to dinner. You're supposed to go see friends. You know, you're supposed to just do anything. You know, we got a date set up and nah, I just don't feel like it. Now, if it happens once, it's no big deal. But if this kind of thing is happening on a regular basis, you better get your mind prepared for something. Because once again, she's telling you that moments with you aren't that special. An activity with you isn't quite as thrilling as it once was. Sometimes she just cancels and she just serves you less than she used to. Now, I better define what I mean by serving you less. Please turn to Genesis chapter 24. Genesis 24 and verse 17. This is about the meeting between Rebekah and Abraham's servant. In the 17th verse, then the servant ran to meet her and said, "Please let me drink a little water from your jar." She said, "Drink, my lord," and she quickly lowered her jar to her hand and gave him a drink. Now when she had finished giving him a drink, she said, "I will draw also for your camels until they have finished drinking." Now, I'm not saying that girls should water camels. I'm not saying they should put the gas in the car or anything like that. Here we are just simply talking about hospitable niceness. We can put it that way, just acts of niceness toward others. When you first start seeing a young lady, you'll be sitting on the couch and suggest that you're hungry and she'll get up and make you a sandwich. She'll bring you a soda. Little things to try to impress you. That's when she's wanting to give you the idea that she thinks you're special. Now, if you ask for a sandwich, she says, "You have 2 legs. And if you don't ask, She doesn't offer. Why? Because you're not all that special anymore. She serves you less, and not only that, she disdains your service. I'm going to take her here. I'm going to take her there. I'll buy this for her. I'm going to buy her something nice. I'll make her the sandwich. And she looked at me like, well, big deal. You're supposed to do that. I'm the princess. It's kind of like this. In Luke 17, Jesus is talking about this in kind of a different realm. Which of you, having a slave plowing or tending sheep, will say to him when he has come in from the field, come immediately and sit down to eat? But will he not say to him, prepare something for me to eat and properly clothe yourself and serve me while I eat and drink, and afterward you may eat and drink? He does not thank the slave because he did the things which were commanded, does he? Wait a minute, all of a sudden I'm being treated like a slave in this relationship here. I work, I come in, I offer an act of service, and I'm treated like, well, you were just supposed to act this way. Now, that's kind of okay if you're in a master-slave relationship, but nobody's in a master-slave relationship anymore, and you didn't expect your girlfriend to do you this way. Kind of sends you a message, doesn't it? And all of a sudden, she's more worried about other things than you. For time and attention, you're standing in line. You're standing in line behind things like school and work and hobbies and friends. And it really doesn't bother you that she goes to school or works or has a hobby or has friends. What bothers you is you know that when you put you in that line, you're down there a little way. Well, you've just been sent a message. She's more worried about other things than you, and you start to see that dead look on her face. Like there's nothing there. In Song of Solomon, chapter 6 and verse 5. Turn your eyes away from me, for they have confused me. You remember when you're probably your wife now, but you remember when your girlfriend looked you in the eye and you saw those eyes and they confused you? All guys have been knocked over with a look before, somewhere along the line. But that was then, this is now. Now you get to looking in that face and there's nothing there. The eyes say that you're just a habit that she can't figure out how to break. And there's no spark there. Now that's another one of these things that you shouldn't have to explain, but you do. In Song of Solomon chapter 3 and verse 1. On my bed, night after night, I sought him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but did not find him. I must arise now and go about the city, in the streets and in the squares. I must seek him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but did not find him. The watchmen who make the rounds in the city found me, and I said, have you seen him whom my soul loves? Scarcely had I left them when I found him whom my soul loves. I held on to him and would not let him go until I had brought him to my mother's house and into the room of her who conceived me. I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the hinds of the field, that you will not arouse or awaken my love until she, or if you'll notice a side margin, until it pleases. That's a young girl dreaming about the guy she's in love with. She obviously has feelings for him. But you come to the fifth verse. I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles, by the hinds of the field, that you will not arouse or awaken my love until she pleases. In man-woman relationships, there are natural desires The purpose of the fifth verse is to remind us that there is a time and a place for that. Excuse me. The time and the place is marriage. Now what verse 5 is saying that there are times when young people have to put on the brakes. You're in a dating relationship, there are times that you cannot awaken or arouse love until she or it pleases. There are times you have to put on the brakes because there is a natural spark. But now, she looks at you and putting on the brakes is easy because there is no spark. She doesn't really find you attractive. And that's a problem. Now, if you're a young guy and you're in a relationship and you notice these things, she's habitually late. Sometimes she just cancels. She serves you less. She disdains your service. She's more worried about other things. You look in the face and there's nothing there. And there's no spark. You're about to get dumped. Now you might say, well, not me. I'm special. Well, yeah, you're going to get dumped. That's the way it is. You're going to get kicked to the curb, left on the side of the road. Now, I have a confession to make. I really care about you guys and that you learn these things. But we're really talking about something else. The scripture reading was Revelation chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. In Revelation 2 and verse 4, we have a message to the church at Ephesus. The big problem with the Ephesian congregation, but this I have against you, that you have left your first love. What does that mean? You've heard a lot of good sermons about what it means to have left your first love. Now, one thing that is certain is that we have a comparison going on here. The church is the bride of Christ. The church is like a woman who has fallen in love with a man. The church has fallen in love with Jesus. There is this husband-wife relationship. In Ephesians 5 and verse 23, for the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body. Now, in the passage that we are looking at, the Lord knows something. There is something that is wrong with this relationship. Slippage is taking place. To some degree, there has been a loss of interest on behalf of the bride in Ephesus. Now, for a congregation to lose interest, it has to begin with the congregation's individual members. A congregation can have a group identity. It can have traits by which it is identifiable. Traits like zeal, traits like love. Revelation 2 and verse 9, to the church at Smyrna, the Lord looks at them and says, you're rich. That characterizes that group. But the group identity starts with the individual members. If a congregation is rich or poor or healthy or strong, it is because the bulk of its members are that way. So if you have a congregation that has left its first love, it's because the majority of the members have left their first love. Now in Ephesus, in the church at Ephesus, could be like a lot of relationships. Maybe it looked good on the outside. In chapter 2 and verse 2, I know your deeds and your toil and perseverance and that you cannot tolerate evil men. Somebody looking in from the outside may have looked at this relationship between the church in Ephesus and Jesus and thought, oh, that's a pretty good relationship. But the Lord knew that that relationship was headed in the wrong direction. Jesus was like a husband looking at a wife, and he was seeing the signs. And in truth, the congregation in Ephesus is not the only place where this kind of thing has happened. There have been other congregations where the Lord could look at the individual members of the bride and know that individuals and the bride, that they were losing interest. Well, how could he know? How could the Lord look and tell that the church at Ephesus, or the church in Clovis, or me as an individual, was somehow losing interest? Well, in the first place, you really can't put anything past Jesus. Where earthly relationships are concerned, people sometimes put up a front, hide what their true feelings and what they're really, really thinking happens to be. And I believe sometimes that since people can do that to other people, they think they can do that with the Lord. In Hebrews 4 and verse 13, all things are naked and open before him with whom we have to do. We can't hide anything from him because he can look into our hearts. And even if he couldn't look into our hearts, he could still know. Because you can always tell when the girl is losing interest. And it's pretty much the same test. Whether you're talking about young men in a relationship with girls or whether you're talking about the church being the bride of Christ. I'm part of the bride. When the Lord looks at me, what does the Lord see? Am I habitually late? All of a sudden, I can't make it to services on time because I have to do one more thing, one more thing, one more thing, and it's consistent. It's a way of life with me to be late. Well, that seems like such a petty issue. Brethren, we are talking about a relationship. And that is one of the first subtle messages that gets sent out when a relationship is heading in the wrong direction. You just aren't important enough to me anymore to make it on time. And then sometimes we just cancel. We just don't show up. Try this out. Say you're a lady. You've got a boyfriend. During the course of the week, he has time to visit. He just doesn't want to. He just doesn't show up. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. He's out doing something else. Saturday comes around. Saturday afternoon, he'll show up for an hour or two. And he's, you know, that's about it. And you say to your boyfriend, well, wait a minute. I mean, you can come over and see me a little bit more than that. But he looks at you and says, an hour, that's enough for me. I'm good with that. I mean, I could be over there. I could see you. But I'm good with this. Has he sent you a message? What lady is going to put up with that? The Lord looks at the bride. Me as an individual member. All week long. I can do everything in the world that I want to do all week long. I could make it on Wednesday. I could make it on Sunday night. I could make it to a group meeting. I can make it to a lot of different things. But if I'm here on Sunday morning for about an hour, I'm good with that. Could be here, Lord. But I'm good with the minimum. Have I sent the Lord a message? If your girlfriend did you that way, you wouldn't like that. If your boyfriend did you that way, you wouldn't like that. What if the Lord sees me serving him less? He doesn't need me to make him a sandwich. He doesn't need me to bring him a soda. But there are little things that show that I think he's special. Turn to 3 John. 3 John, verses 4 through 6. I have no greater joy than this, to hear of my children walking in the truth. Beloved, you are acting faithfully in whatever you accomplish for the brethren, and especially when they are strangers. And they have testified of your love before the church. You will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. When you accomplish things for the brethren, you accomplish things for the Lord. Now you might say, Scott, I don't even think in those terms. I'm just, if I'm here once in a while, that ought to be good enough. I mean, Jesus has power. He's up in heaven, the power of deity. He can do whatever he wants to do. He can make his own sandwich. If I'm in a relationship with someone who thinks that way, have I been sent a message? And not only I serve him less, but what if I disdain his service? Sometimes in the world, again, you see relationships between men and women where no matter how much one of the parties does for the other person acts like that's not enough. You ought to do more, and that's just the way it should be. Some do the Lord that way. In John 10 and verse 11, the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Now if you talk about service, the ultimate service, Jesus laid down his life for the sheep, and yet there are some that just don't seem to be moved by that very much. Because after all, I'm part of the bride. The bride's beautiful. The bride is lovely. That's just the way it should be. The husband ought to lay down his life for the wife. So Jesus, you should do more for me and overlook the fact that I'm not willing to do a whole lot for you. Lord, if I give you a penny, you ought to be thrilled with that. And if you give me a dollar, I wonder why you haven't given me two. If I'm being treated that way in a physical relationship, I've been sent a message, and I'm going to pick up on it, and so are you. If we send the Lord that message, do you think he will pick up on it? And I'm more worried about other things than I'm worried about what the husband thinks. You ever stop to think about the fact that the same thing that breaks up earthly relationships are the same things that break up one's spiritual relationships with the Lord? Say I'm a man that is more interested in school or work or hobbies or friends than I am my wife. That's going to break that up. Now I might deny it, I might say, no, I'm not more interested in these things, but when it gets right down to it, this is where I'm spending my time. Now we talk about the relationship between Jesus and his bride. Well, here is the bride spending more time at school, work, hobby, friends. Now we might want to say, well, no, that doesn't mean I'm more interested in these things than I am in Jesus, it's just this is where I choose to spend my time. The same thing that breaks up marriages in this world will break up marriages between the Lamb and the bride. Sometimes we've got to get hit in the head with a brick to see this. No, I love my spouse, but I choose these things when I'm really up against it. No, I love the Lord, but I choose these things when I'm really up against it. Matthew 6:33, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Sometimes you can explain that until you're blue in the face and people don't want to see it. But even if they don't see it, they do send a message. And then sometimes you get that dead look on the face. It's visible. I mean, sometimes it's visible from the pew. You can look at the person sitting next to you and look on the faces. And brethren, I can't tell you what you can see from the pulpit when you're standing up here. The dead look. Highly recognizable. Sometimes you see it in the pew. Sometimes you see it in the foyer. Sometimes you see it when people are going out the door. The look says, I'm really not glad to be here. It's just a habit I can't figure out how to break. Now, if that's you, you know it. But trust me, you're not the only one that knows it. There are others that see the dead look. The important part is the Lord knows what the dead look looks like when he sees it. And then sometimes there's just no spark. I can speak of the love of God and the sacrifice of Jesus, and sometimes people just don't feel anything. Guys, now, I'll admit I pulled your chain a little bit. It's not like I was some great lover and know everything about romance and all that. Of course, you already knew that. But I know this. If she's habitually late and she just cancels and serves you less and disdains your service and is more worried about other things than you, and you see nothing when you look in her eyes and there is no spark there like there was before, you're getting dumped. You can cry about it all you want, but it's going to happen. Likewise, if the Lord looks at the bride, if he looks at the individuals in a congregation and he sees a person who's habitually late, just doesn't show up, serves less, disdains his service, more worried about other things, really not that interested in being here, and the spark's gone, what do you think he knows? Somebody's leaving. If this happens to me, if I become this person in my relationship to the Lord, it's my loss. And I will eventually come to the understanding that I should have preserved that relationship. That relationship is entered by obedience to the gospel. Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He that believeth not shall be condemned. That's from the Lord's mouth on how a person becomes a Christian. If you're here tonight and you desire to enter into a relationship with Jesus, if you believe that God raised him from the dead enough to turn from your sins and confess your faith, then baptism will put you into Christ. If you've not entered, you have the opportunity. If you have entered into a relationship with Christ, maintain that relationship. Don't let these things characterize you. If you're here and desire to obey the gospel, will you come forward while we sing?